Welcome to SCOTUSCast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUSCast, Lawful Permanent Residency, Admission, and the Stop Time Rule Edition. I'm your host, Grace Gotchling. On April 23, 2020, in a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court decided Barton v. Barr, a case involving a dispute over whether, for the purposes of the Stop Time Rule, a lawfully admitted permanent resident who is not seeking admission to the United States can be rendered inadmissible. The stop time rule affects the discretion afforded the U.S. Attorney General to cancel the removal from the United States of a lawful permanent resident who has resided in the U.S. continuously for 7 years. Under the stop time rule, the requisite continuous residence terminates once the alien commits any of a certain number of offenses that render the alien inadmissible to or removable from the United States under federal law. Thus, committing a listed offense may cause an alien to fall short of the continuous 7-year residence requirement and thereby become ineligible for cancellation of removal. In a 5-4 vote, the Supreme Court affirmed, holding that the eligibility for cancellation of removal of a lawful permanent resident who commits a serious crime during the initial 7 years of residence need not be one of the offenses of removal. The opinion was given by Justice Kavanaugh on April 23, 2020. Justice Sotomayor filed a dissenting opinion in which Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, and Kagan joined. And now, to discuss the case, we have Amy Moore, Professor of Law at Belmont University College of Law.
On April 23, 2020, the Supreme Court decided the case of Barton v. Barr in a tight split. Justice Kavanaugh authored the opinion, and Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Thomas, Justice Alito, and Justice Gorsuch joined that opinion. Justice Sotomayor authored the dissent, and she was joined by Justice Ginsburg, Justice Breyer, and Justice Kagan. So it was a 5-4 split. Andre Barton, the subject of the case, is a Jamaican national who is also a lawful permanent resident, or LPR, in the United States. When the government attempted to remove Mr. Barton from the United States, he admitted he was removable, but applied for a type of relief called cancellation of removal. In order to be eligible for cancellation of removal, an LPR must meet 3 statutory requirements. 1, he must never have been convicted of an aggravated felony. 2, he must have been an LPR for at least 5 years. And 3, he must have continuously resided in the United States for 7 years after lawful admission. Mr. Barton has been lawfully in this country since 1989 and has not been convicted of an aggravated felony. However, an immigration judge, the Board of Immigration Appeals, and the 11th Circuit all found that Mr. Barton was not statutorily eligible for cancellation of removal. That is, he did not meet the statutory predicate for relief. Why not? Among other crimes not relevant to the case, Mr. Barton was convicted of multiple counts of assault. The issue before the court was whether these offenses stopped the clock on his continuous presence in the United States under the statute. The statute specifies that time is stopped when an alien commits an offense referred to in Section 1182A2 that renders the alien inadmissible under 1182A2 or removable under certain sections of 1227. Inadmissibility attaches to aliens seeking admission, and deportability attaches to aliens already admitted who then become removable. Before 1996, there were 2 types of removal hearings: exclusion hearings for those being denied entrance into the United States, and deportation hearings for those who were being discharged from the United States. These hearings were collapsed into one proceeding, a removal proceeding, in 1996. However, the statute still maintains separate standards for those being excluded, now termed being inadmissible, and those being deported. The cancellation of removal provision refers to both of these paths. Mr. Barton clearly committed an offense referred to in Section 1182A2. However, that offense could not render him removable under 1227. It was listed in 1182A2, but not as an element for removal under 1227. So the real question was whether a properly admitted, lawful permanent resident who had not left the country could be rendered inadmissible just by committing an offense listed in 1182. The majority said yes, because inadmissibility is a categorization that Mr. Barton achieved through his earlier crimes. In the circuit courts, the court below the 11th Circuit agreed with the 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Circuits that Mr. Barton could not be eligible for cancellation of removal under the statute. The 9th Circuit had interpreted the statute differently. Justice Kavanaugh, writing for the court, affirmed the 11th Circuit's ruling. The opinion begins by going over the structure of the statute in this area and laying out the requirements for cancellation of removal and for the stop time rule. He frames the key question as being whether an offense that precludes cancellation of removal must also itself be an offense that leads to removal. He cites to the Board of Immigration Appeals for an interpretation that an alien need not be charged or found inadmissible or removable on the applicable ground in order for the criminal conduct to terminate continuous residence in the United States. He does not, however, even entertain the concept of Chevron deference to this interpretation, preferring to use it instead as helpful authority to make his point that the agency and most circuits are in agreement. When the 9th Circuit diverged from other circuit interpretations, it did so on the grounds that the 1182 offenses were not part of the offenses that led to removal. In other words, for Mr. Barton's case, he was not removed because of the assault charges, so those charges could not themselves prohibit cancellation of removal unless they were for an aggravated felony. In order to answer the ultimate question, the statute has to be interpreted. Kavanaugh argues that the statute provides two distinct ways that prior crimes can interfere with cancellation of removal. First, the law precludes cancellation of removal if the alien has been convicted of an aggravated felony at any time. Second, the law precludes cancellation of removal if certain other crimes were committed during the initial 7 years of residence. Those certain other crimes are listed in Section 1182A2. Kavanaugh concludes that this section of the Immigration and Nationality Act functions like a traditional recidivist sentencing statute. At sentencing, he reasons, even if someone is convicted of one crime, their overall criminal record may impact their ultimate sentence. The crimes listed in Section 1182 are serious enough to deny admission, so they should be considered as well in whether someone is eligible for cancellation of removal. However, in the statute, the alien must be rendered inadmissible for the relevant crime. Kavanaugh argues that by committing the crime and being convicted for it, ultimately Mr. Barton was rendered inadmissible even though he was never found inadmissible or charged with being inadmissible as a lawfully admitted permanent resident. Mr. Barton pushes back on this interpretation. He argues that the assault offenses were not the ones that rendered him removable and so cannot be part of the calculation to determine whether he is eligible for cancellation of removal. Ultimately, Kavanaugh suggests that if Mr. Barton were correct, Congress would have just said the alien is not eligible for cancellation of removal if the offense of removal was committed during the alien's initial 7 years of residence. There are many things Congress could have said. Kavanaugh articulates three arguments that Mr. Barton makes, but warns the reader that they are not easy to unpack. First, Mr. Barton argues that the structure of the entire section, the overall structure of the section, supports his point. Kavanaugh disagrees, because if cancellation of removal focused only on the offenses of removal, why would there be statutory language that refers to Section 1182 at all? 1182 is not usually the basis for removal for lawful permanent residents. Other sections in the statute say removable by reason of a certain offense, and so if this were the intent of Congress, other language would be used. Second, Mr. Barton argues that the offense he committed could not render him inadmissible because he was a lawfully admitted permanent resident. It was impossible for him to be rendered inadmissible. Kavanaugh says the statutory text says an alien can be rendered or categorized as inadmissible just by committing the listed offenses. So if an alien commits, for example, a crime involving moral turpitude, Section 1182 categorizes them as inadmissible whether or not they are ever separately found to be inadmissible by another judicial body. Kavanaugh points to other examples in the INA where Congress relies on the category or status of inadmissibility without an alien being found to be inadmissible. Third, Mr. Barton argues about surplusage in the language. The canon of statutory construction dealing with surplusage means that every piece of a statute should be given meaning. No word or phrase is redundant or inoperative because the legislature intended for it to be there. Let's look at the direct language of the statute to be given meaning. An alien is not eligible for cancellation of removal if he, quote, commits an offense referred to in Section 1182A2 that renders the alien inadmissible to the United States under Section 1182A2 of this title, or removable from the United States under Section 1227A2 or 1227A4 of this title, end quote. Kavanaugh argues that any crime that is referred to in 1182 that would render an alien removable under 1227 would also render them inadmissible under 1182, so there is surplusage under either interpretation. But, he says, redundancies are common in statutory drafting. He writes that Congress made a choice to categorically preclude cancellation of removal for non-citizens who have substantial criminal records. Mr. Barton falls into that category and is therefore precluded from relief. Justice Sotomayor writes a dissent that is very close in length to the opinion itself. She explains that to trigger the stop-time rule, an alien must, one, commit an offense, but also, two, the offense committed must render the alien either inadmissible or deportable. Inadmissible and deportable are mutually exclusive in removal proceedings. An alien can be one or the other, but not both. When the court concludes that Barton is inadmissible, Justice Sotomayor says this is an impossibility. As a lawful permanent resident who is not seeking admission, he could not be inadmissible. She says neither the express language of the statute nor any interpretive canons support this paradox. Just as the majority had done, Sotomayor wades back through the text of the statute itself. She explains the history of separating and then combining the phrases of exclusion and deportability under the umbrella of removability. Amidst all this change, inadmissibility and deportability are still separate concepts triggered by different grounds. This is underscored by the preferential treatment that lawful permanent residents receive in obtaining relief from removal. LPRs are presumed to have stronger ties to the United States than transient aliens. Mr. Barton himself had strong ties to the United States. After attending rehab, he was never arrested again. He graduated from college, began his own business, and became a father of four small children. It was not until 10 years after his last arrest that removal was initiated by the government. The only issue in Mr. Barton's case, the only thing that could prevent him from potentially receiving the cancellation of removal outside of discretion, was the stop time rule. So again, the question becomes, did his assault offenses stop time for him? Justice Sotomayor says at the very least, an offense cannot render someone inadmissible unless the government can legally charge the non-citizen with the ground of inadmissibility. In other words, you cannot enter the category of inadmissible until some judicial organ finds you to be actually inadmissible, or at least you're charged with being potentially inadmissible. The statute does not say the relevant offense could render you inadmissible, but does render you inadmissible. The majority's approach, she argues, flouts basic statutory interpretation principles, including the rule against surplusage. The examples relied on by the majority, she explains, are about LPRs who are adjusting their status. An adjustment of status is a proxy for admission, which is why it is important that those people are not inadmissible under the statute. Moreover, the government conceded in its brief that mandatory detention purposes, an inadmissible alien must at least be a possible charge on a non-citizen seeking admission. So the stop-time rule, she reasons, must be the same and refer to adjudications that are possible and not impossible. And if an alien had already been lawfully admitted, it is impossible to render them inadmissible. Ignoring the canon about surplusage, the majority says it is surplusage on both sides and it makes no difference. Justice Sotomayor argues it is the court's duty to give effect, if possible, to every clause and word of a statute. She writes that the majority's interpretation is at odds with the statutory structure, canons of construction, and common sense.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. SCOTUS Cast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.